When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Sons of a Gun, a podcast about the DC Universe. I'm Alex Gunn, a son of a gun.
I'm Justin Gunn, a second son of a same gun.
I'm Pete. Pete Gunn, who is ashamed of our family and ashamed of our celebrity father, who we can't mention who he is for legal reasons. But we're going to be talking about The Penguin, episode 2 on HBO and Max, Inside Man. If you haven't checked it out yet, either live on HBO or streaming on Max, please do, because we are going to spoil it. But brief bit of recap here, a broad overview of the episode. So, at the end of the last episode, the Penguin, Oz Cobb, had manipulated the situation so it looked like Alberto Falcone was killed by the Maronis, and we're dealing with the fallout here as he is continuing to play both sides to what goal?
Dangerous.
Basically his own goal. But the noose is really tightening around him this episode as Sophia starts her own investigation. She doesn't really believe that Alberto was killed by the Maronis, and then later on, after an attack on a drop shipment, she thinks there's a, per the title, an inside man in the Falcones. She's right, but Penguin has managed to twist the situation by the end so that somebody else gets killed in his stead. Sophia trusts him. And yeah, that's the main thrust of the episode. There's a lot of other things going on here, but let's do a temp check first. It seemed like everybody was pretty positive on the first episode with maybe some reservations. How are you feeling about episodos?
What happened there? He fell apart at the end.
Oh, his drops just hit. Alex's drops.
Stop with the drops, bro.
Now, dude. Do they do that to your hair? Like the detective had that really cool hair where he had like a different colored tuft in the front. That was pretty sweet.
That hair was so hard to look at. I was like, is he some sort of skunkor? What's happening with this guy? I was like, it's such a weird choice. And like, maybe that's the actor's hair, but like, you can put a wig or a dye on that guy.
Yeah.
That was.
It's distinctive, wild. I guess what I would say.
Yeah. It's distinctive. You got to have some guy. You know, there's so many Vinnies and stuff. You got to stick out. And hair is a great way to express yourself. You know, a lot of people just put hats on, but not this guy. So, yeah, I think that this is my temp check. I'm still having a blast with this show. It's, you know, it's tense, man, because the Penguin is just barely getting by with his plan. And a lot of his plan hinges on a kid who's just thrown into this world who I keep thinking, like, bro, just keep run away and never look back. But so, yeah, it's very tense, which I think is was a fun choice. Yeah, it's a fun roller coaster ride. I'm very much enjoying it.
I love you're identifying so hard with Vic, Pete.
Oh, man. Vic's us in this situation.
Is he? I mean, I have questions about Vic that we'll probably talk about in a second. I will say I really like this. I still really like this show. I think this is a little bit of a step down of the really impressive focus of the first episode. Like, it was so time-wise, the journey of this night, for the most part, between Oz and Victor that I thought was really smartly done and set up for everything. Here, we're settling more into the plot and settling more into the characters. So, like you were saying, Pete, still very tense. Really good stuff throughout this episode, really intriguing stuff that's thrown in here. But this very much felt to me like a second episode. I've heard that it heats up and goes in insane directions by the end of the season, which I'm excited to see.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to say, too. What's that?
I can't believe you're like, oh, falls into the old second episode trap.
It is, though. I'm sorry. There's a structure to seasons.
It's called Dos Episodos.
Oh, okay.
It's very distinky.
I think that All right, whatever, man. Justin, what were you going to say?
Why are you mad?
He kills me with this, like, oh, it's a classic step. And then, do you want me to explain it?
Because I feel like you're not going to be happier when I explain what I mean by that.
You're damn right I'm not.
Yeah. I would say let's be happy with this relationship as it is. Right? Right, guys?
Yep.
Can't fix a sinking ship. But what I was going to say is the second episode thing, like, pilots are often a very distinct thing, and then the second episode is sort of the beginning of the movement of what the show is going to be. And I think what Alex is saying is, like, they have a lot of homework to do in this second episode of setting up all the tension points, and there are a lot. And I really like it. It is sort of there's a little bit of heavy lifting to do in the episode, and you feel it just a little bit. But I think Colin Farrell is so good in this role that I'm like, that's not him. That's the Penguin. Yeah. And I believe it. I look at him. I'm like, that's not him.
Yeah.
Not him. I can't. And that's an impressive thing where I'm like, I know it's him, but it's not.
Classically trained actor speaking there.
I feel so conflicted about it. Like, I think a lot of people do, because in essence, to just put it out front, he should not be wearing a fat suit. Like, that's not a thing that should be happening in 2024. There's an argument to be made of, if you can't recognize it as Colin Farrell, why get Colin Farrell? Why not get another actor? But I think
that's a little harsh, I think. Oh, I was going to say, like, I think he is giving a performance, and there is a lot of prosthetic and makeup and all that. And the fat suit controversy, that feels like something that we can leave aside to comment on Colin as an actor here. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, how could we ever talk about this? But I think
I want to agree with you, because that was the second part I was going to say, is it's not that his great performance excuses the controversy of the fat suit, but he is still giving a performance exactly like you're saying. So just agree.
Exactly. Two separate issues that I think can be discussed separately. But I think his performance, it's not just the makeup doing all the work and the sort of lower part of his face that is very distinctive and makes for an iconic image. His performance is really good, and it's really weird in the right ways, I think. Like, when he's hanging out with Vic and just, like, doing bits, I'm like, how does this track with a dude who takes the tiniest knife in the knife store and kills a dude very slowly by stabbing his heart?
With a pool of blood. That was so much blood there. It was insane.
I was like, yikes.
It's a regulation pocket knife. I don't know what you mean by the tiniest knife. I mean,
it looks very small. Pete, you're a knife regulator, right?
I'm a knife guy. I'm a knife guy. I don't know if you've seen the thing on Kimmel, but I'm a fan of the knife guys.
Yeah. You go around to the steakhouses.
By the way, the answer, have you seen that thing on Kimmel? The answer for me is always going to be absolutely not.
Okay. You've never seen Knife Guys? It's a fun bit.
No.
Ryan Gosling?
I also haven't seen Knife Guys, but I think I get what you're talking about.
Okay, great. Anyways, as someone with a club foot and walks with a limp, it's nice to see that on screen. It's enjoyable, and I like, having a distinct walk is a kind of a fun thing with different characters. So it's nice to kind of like, that whole moment where he's like, you fucking gimp. And then they kind of brawl, and he's kind of like putting the knife in the pocket kind of move. I'm sure there could be other people who are like saying that they think somebody who really has that kind of thing should be represented there. But I don't know. It's just nice to kind of see it on screen. And
I think he's doing a good job across the board.
Go ahead, Justin. I was
going to talk about a little bit about you guys. It's funny that you guys both mentioned that the tension is so high and that you like it. And I think the show is setting this up to have a figure who isn't a mastermind. He's sort of like dumb about it. Like, if someone followed him for 10 minutes, they'd be like, oh, he's the traitor. He's the one. Let's kill him right now. And that show's over. And let's just end the show there. But he's just so that's an added layer of stress for me where I'm like, oh, he's not actually good at this. He just keeps doing it immediately. I feel like he's literally driving from Maroni Mansion to Falcone Mansion and back and forth and being like, you know what I think we should do? Kill the Falconis. Yeah. And he's like, you know what we should do? Kill his Maroni. I'm like, what the fuck? Take a break. Go visit your mom again or something.
Yeah, every time he says, so like, don't worry, I'm on top of it, I got it, this plan, I'm like, there's not. There 100% isn't. You were improvising every single moment of this, which...
That's why it's so stressful.
Well, that's why it's so stressful, but I think that's also what... He's not a good guy. He's murdering people. He's causing other people to murder people. But I think part of the reason... maybe not identify with him, but we feel for him, is there is this very human aspect of he's the underdog in this situation at every single point. And the fact that, granted, they're writing it, obviously, but like the fact that he's pulling all this stuff out of his ass at any single moment is very impressive. Like his story to Sophia at I don't think it was the reception to the funeral. I think it was still at the funeral where he's talking about his brother's dying and dancing with his mom. And you realize at the end, he's like, she died years ago. You're like, you were lying about all of this, probably.
Yeah.
Maybe he's been lying the whole time.
Mm-hmm. And here's my take on that. Constantly lies. That's his main thing. I think what they did with the show and when they were pitching it and developing it, they were like, you know what was cool? Sopranos, Breaking Bad, Mad Men. What if we just shook them all up in a little cocktail glass and poured out Oz Cobb, who is literally like maybe the central nexus point between those three difficult men of early prestige television? And I will say it is effective because everyone is sort of simplifying. It's like it's Sopranos with Batman stuff in it. And I'm like, it's not that simple. Like, it is that, but there are other flavors in here that I think are really working.
Well, I think that's the entry point, right? I can't remember whether we talked about this last episode. I know we talked about it a little bit on our Patreon Slack, but like the initial DC projects, it's pretty clear, like you're saying, that at least that was part of the pitch process. Like, what if we did Sopranos? HBO, what do you think? That was pretty successful. Let's do it, but in Gotham City. And Lanterns is coming up, and that's very specifically they said up front. It's like True Detective, but with Green Lanterns. And I don't know if they're ever going to do it, but they talked about the Themyscira show, the one that wouldn't have Wonder Woman but go back in time, would be like Game of Thrones, but with the Amazons. So they're using that as like a pitch point. Then the proof is in how it pans out in the long run, right? Like that first episode, you can see the DNA of Sopranos. Like you're saying, the second episode, very much see the DNA of Breaking Bad in there. But ultimately, it's over the course of the episodes, does it become its own thing? Does it justify its existence in Gotham City? And I think, frankly, so far, it does. Like, I think it's an extreme version of it, but I can see the DNA of Gotham City, of the Batman lore in there, which, not to jump to something entirely different, but to go to the beginning of the episode, we get Sophia Falcone seems like it's a flashback to her time in Arkham. She goes to see Alberto in the Visitation. He doesn't have a finger. That's when you realize, she's actually having some sort of nightmare or hallucination. Nice little Easter egg. I don't even know if it's an Easter egg, but it's the same set from when the Riddler and Batman talk back in the Batman.
Yeah.
So that was a neat just like visual continuation there. But my point here is we meet this new character, Dr. Julian Rush, played by Theo Rossi, who is so awesome in
Luke Cage guy.
Luke Cage, Sons of Anarchy, a bunch of other things. He's great. Great to see him here. But
as creepy-ass therapist.
Creepy-ass therapist. Horrible therapist. As soon as he popped up, I was like, is this Scarecrow? Are they doing Dr. Jonathan Crane? And they're not. He's Dr. Julian Rush. But I think it still tracks in terms of like, we're in Gotham City with the most messed up therapists of all time was the point that I was getting at here.
Therapists make you crazier. Mm-hmm. Well, and like, that's what the red light thing. I was like, this is very weird and cool. I thought that was a nice comic book-y element or just like sort of indie movie element to put in there. But some of the stuff I was reading about it is it's a Doctor Strange or Hugo Strange reference. They're trying to put Julian Rush as that.
I thought it was just a writer who's a fan of the band Rush and was just a Rush head. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's got to be it. But yeah, the therapist really creeped me the fuck out because you know he's like hugging her and like really close to her face, and I was just like, yo, dude. This whole patient,
you go to therapy, right? You kiss your therapist?
No, that's not a thing, man. That's not a thing is my point. Yeah.
That's what my therapist told me.
But that therapist kisses you, though, right?
Right.
While you're not asleep, while your eyes are closed.
No, I'm saying, like, this is she's going to a horrible therapist, and I'm worried about the choices that she's making. I mean, I've been really
impressed. You're worried about just the therapist part? I think she's got some problems all up and down.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get to, is I've been really impressed with her mental state. Like, her world is crumbling.
Yeah. Ask the life goals from Pete LePage.
Yeah, I mean, her world is crumbling around her, and, you know, she's having nightmares, but she's holding it together in public. It was kind of funny the way that she, well, pretty well. I mean,
you can tell Pete's been helping out his family with some parenting lately, because he's like, I love what she's doing. She wants to get rid of her whole family. She's done with them. She wants it's to great. Be done with them.
She gets to sleep in the closet in a private place where nobody can get at her. Yeah.
I mean, when she walks in that room, everybody is quiet and then starts whispering about her. I would have lost my shit. And she held it together and then kind of ate like a crazy person and kind of mocked them.
That's the opposite of holding it together. She digs into some pesto pasta at a reception and eats it.
Yeah, to be like, is this what you want to see? You want to see the fucking crazy person
holding it together?
Yes! I would have started screaming at people, throwing food, being like, you want quiet? Oh my God.
Wow. You want quiet? I'll give you quiet. Eat a whole
everybody at the reception was like, that was a very sane thing Pete just did. Yeah, he's holding it together really well right now.
I've been impressed with her mental state. Like, you know, I mean, they keep kind of, I mean, Arkham Asylum, of what we've seen of it, is a complete nightmare. The fact that she can, like, walk out of there and is handling business a little bit is impressive.
I love that take. That's such a funny take, because I feel like the show is being like, this lady's about to lose it in every direction. She's going to kill all of the characters. And you're like,
she's the most sane person in Gotham City. Yeah. I do think there's a pretty clear indication that, yes, there's an inappropriate relationship happening between Dr. Julian Rush and Sophia Falcone, whether it's the past, the future, current. I guess we don't really know, but I think there is a little bit of kiss therapy going on there for sure. The red light thing, I believe, is...
Don't say kiss therapy. That's not a thing. No, what the fuck?
That's a real thing. That's my therapy. Therapist keeps telling me it's a real thing, so I have to believe that. Otherwise, my insurance is going to default on it, and I can't.
I want to rock and roll all night and have therapy every day.
Mm-hmm. I'm against this bit.
The red light therapy, I believe, is a real thing for hypnosis. It's a calming color, apparently, which is surprising given the
doesn't seem like
that's what the devil says to me every night.
I don't know if you guys remember that.
Yeah, and you're doing kiss therapy with him, right?
That had red everywhere. That was not calming, man. It was not calming.
That's going on. The other thing that I thought was really interesting that the show is doing with Sophia is slowly eking out this information about Arkham and giving us like little visual cues there. For example, when she gets out of the closet, she's sleeping in the closet, she's sleeping on a cot with no sheets, clearly because she was traumatized by her time in Arkham, and that's the only place where she feels safe or some semblance of normalcy. She gets out, and we very clearly see, which was indicated in the previous scene, there's these scratches on her throat, and she has blood under her fingernails. My theory there, I think the thing that they're indicating, is she did these hangman murders, right? She killed seven women. That's very different from the comic. In the comic, the hangman killed a bunch of cops to try to frame Harvey Dent because of what happened in The Long Halloween. This takes place in Dark Victory. But the scratches here seem to indicate, to me at least, maybe somebody was hanging her in Arkham, I think. Like she was trying to scratch like off the noose.
Yeah,
and I assume it was like not a hanging to death so much as maybe even a regular thing they did to her.
Like hanging out?
Yeah, like hanging out. That's what you do, right?
That's where that comes from.
Yeah, I believe so. That's
Pete's ashamed.
Pete hates Pete's ashamed. Pete's like, please. Hey,
this is a show that you like. This is a character you think is handling it.
Until you guys are making bits of like very serious things.
Yeah. We're talking about the show.
Pete is like this close to reaching into the salsa bowl next to him with his hands and just smearing it all over his face. You know, being like, same thing. I'm normal.
Yeah. I love salsa straight from the hand. Everyone wants to normalize chips and salsa. Salsa is a cold soup, you guys.
Yeah, it's basically gazpacho, which everybody loves.
Spicy gazpacho.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I like what they're doing with Sophia, slowly parsing out that information there. I think it's really nicely done. I do think the relationship that she forms over the course of the episode with Oz is interesting and surprising, because I fully expected them to be like, at blows the entire eight episodes.
Yeah.
But by the end of the episode, she seems to come around and form an alliance with him based on a bunch of lies that he's fed her and situations where he's manipulated her to get into this position. What do you think Oz wants out of this? And what do you think Sophia is getting out of this?
This was my big question coming out of the episode as well. Go ahead, Pete.
I was just going to say, it seems like they're going to use each other and then murder each other or the first chance they get. I mean, you know, she is like, all right, well, if I suspect him, maybe the best thing to do is just kind of have him close where I can watch him type of situation.
I think it could be that. It could be. They seem to be playing a little bit like they're kindred spirits, that they're mm-hmm. both. That was like the scene you were describing earlier, Alex. But is that possible? They sort of set up the song at the end of the episode has romantic overtones to it. There's potential. Dude. Like, is that what's happening here? Is he playing her? She seems like she needs him as an ally, and he's the only person outside of this system, she thinks, that she can trust right now. Huge mistake, obviously, but I don't know. I can't tell if he's just trying to step on her to get to his power, or if he's genuinely wants to boost her up while he can.
I think he'll play that card, but I think he wants to run it and she wants to run it. So he's like, well, this will, you know, help with my agenda to kind of take over the family. So yeah, I'm in it. I'm in this, you know, even though that he'll ruin it as soon as he gets a chance. So.
Him doing that has genuine Wile E. Coyote energy. Like, I'll get that Roadrunner. And it's like, oh, you're holding a lit bomb right now, dude. So
I took it as Oz, because he's been lying about everything and playing things relatively close to his vest up until somebody's like, did you do this thing? And he's like, absolutely. And here's, I did it. And just confesses everything the second somebody just digs into him. I think he played it effectively. Like, I think he is playing Sophia, sees it as his best way of destroying both the Falcones and the Maronis so he can become the kingpin of crime here in Gotham City. So he'll dispose of Sophia at a moment's notice. But I do think from Sophia's direction, she has been effectively played in terms of he's the only person treating her like a human being this entire time. There's that upsetting scene where her old friend comes up. They're talking about hanging out at Lake Como.
Girls trip,
and then the daughter comes over and she immediately squeezes the daughter next to her, that I thought was so nicely done. And it just shows, like, that lady is lying to her. She's trying to be this person for Sophia that she needs to be publicly and treat it that way because Sophia has a certain amount of power, but ultimately there's a lie
she's
there.
Scared. Yeah.
And I think to get back to what we were talking about earlier, the thing about Oz's character is he has no lines. Like, there is no line he won't cross as far as we know right now. Maybe something with his mom eventually, but other than that, he'll just do absolutely anything to protect himself and rise up the ranks.
That's an interesting thing because, like, Vic's starting to catch on to that because every story Oz tells him and one of the people that he talks about is dead. You know what I mean? Because Vic's like, hey, what happened? Like, oh, yeah, he got murdered. You know, and then he's like, oh, you know. So I feel like Vic's hopefully going to catch on that he's got no chance of surviving this relationship. But one thing I really want to talk about is the knife switching, because we have an interesting moment where Oz plants the knife on Vidi, but then Vidi plants it on another guy. So, like, that was really insane because Vidi knows the Penguin is the actual bad, but to save his own ass, he planted it on the next guy. So,
is that what happened? Or I thought we, as the viewers, were supposed to think that Oz planted on Vidi, but he actually planted on the other guy.
How could he have planted on the other guy? He was nowhere near that other guy. He had the knife in his hand. Then he got all up in Vidi's grill. So now the knife's on Vidi. Then that security guard comes over to Vidi, and now the security guard's got it.
That's interesting. I didn't think of that way maybe. Either. I thought it was just a scuffle, and he ended up just putting it wherever he could.
Could he get it from his hand all the way over to another
wasn't
guy?
Wasn't he the guy that got killed? Wasn't he sort of the last guy trying to break him up?
I think so.
Yeah, that's I don't know. I mean, it had to go to...
I'd well, have to rewatch the scene. You might be 100% yeah. right.
And that's that a cool twist to it if it yeah. is right, because Oz has the photos of Vidi, and if Vidi has some info on Cobb, that's a nice like fight they can have.
Yeah.
But I think there's a much larger reveal that I think Pete teased earlier, because the one line that Oz refuses to cross is the cilantro line.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's a big reveal for the continuity that Penguin has the soap cilantro gene.
Mm-hmm. He has a weakness in his cilantro.
Weakness, what do you guys, exactly. Do any of you have the tasting cilantro tasting like soap thing?
I put a wad of cilantro in my lip like chewing tobacco every day.
That's a great way to start the day, dude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we're all good. We're superior human beings. It's great.
I have no problem with cilantro. Okay. Yeah.
Let me ask you a question just to tie it back to the last episode. So the slushies we already discussed taste best as a suicide with all the flavors. Yep. Can you throw some cilantro in there, Pete?
Oh, my God. That is nasty. Yeah.
that's the line. Yo, that crops. Oh, I'm so sorry.
You're bringing a spice rack down to the slushy machine.
Dude, come on, man.
Can I have a tahini rim on my suicide slushie?
Come on, dude. Don't do that.
Yeah.
I will say the suicide slushie is the garbage plate of drinks.
It's a good point, but both are delicious, so.
Can we talk about Vic a little bit? Because I think there's still some interesting stuff going on with him. I know we did talk about this in the last podcast. I feel like we still... Everything that we are told about Vic right now, other than visually, for the most part, is coming from Oz, where Oz is like, come on, you want to rise up the ranks, you want to be a driver, you want to be just like me, yay, you're a kid from the wrong side of the tracks, here we go. And Vic's not saying any of that. I think the two interesting visual indicators that I took away, and the one verbal one, at that party where a bunch of the sex workers come over, they have a bunch of the Falcones at Oz's place, which, little side note, does Oz live in a bank?
Yeah, I don't know. It seems like a
big bank ball is where he sleeps. It's a safe place to sleep, man.
Yeah, pretty cool. Anyway, he gets a text right before that from somebody named Graciela who says, where are you at? Are you okay? And he puts the phone away. Earlier on, before that, when they bring the tacos back to the apartment, he stops briefly and he looks at a bunch of missing signs on a telephone pole from the flood caused by the Riddler. Here's my theory at this point, is Vic is with Oz because he lost somebody. I'm going to guess his parents in the flood. Graciela is his sister. And what's going on is that he wants to find them. There are no resources for poor people to find absolutely anybody in Gotham City. And he thinks his best shot is somebody with the Falcones or with the Baronis who has some sort of power who can help find where his parents are, either alive or dead.
Well, and that feels that's a Batman origin coded character right there.
Yes.
So are we setting Vic up to be vigilante of sorts?
I think this kind of series ends with Vic turning on Penguin and we get a kind of like a reveal of like, you know, like you killed my parents or you're the reason so-and-so who was close to me died and I'm going to, you know.
Yeah.
So you're going to get like a Robin invite?
Maybe there's something else going on with him. Like the way, and it isn't just like we get the conversation that he has with the sex worker where he can't get stuff out. Yeah. Because of the stutter, but it also seems like he doesn't want to talk about it. Like he is actually holding stuff close to his chest there, much closer than the Penguin. So I don't know. I'm very curious about the character and what we find out about him.
I feel like we're going to get that a reveal we've seen before in culture where in the final confrontation, he will be stuttering and it'll suddenly his voice will drop crystal clear and he'll be like,
you think they do
I
that?
I hate you. I don't know. The stutter feels so pushed in this show. And I'm like, because that's where I'm like, I don't know, guys, this feels a little it's exploitive of
because
that.
He kept it going no when way. Vic when Penguin was in his safe. And nobody else was around. Like, I was wondering if it was going to drop a little bit there. You know what I mean? But that's when it was...
I don't know. It's so out there that I feel like it's part of the plot.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're pushing it.
Because
hard,
he doesn't stutter as much around Penguin It's just like certain times when
I think it's clearly the stuff that he's comfortable talking about, that there's no stress there. Like, it's a stutter that becomes more pronounced when he's stressed out. You can see that in the conversation with, I think her name is Roxy or Rox, the sex worker he's talking to, the cam girl, where when he's talking about working with Oz, he's like, yeah, I'm his driver. And there's a little bit of a stutter there. But the second she starts pushing about Crown Point, where he comes from, he just cannot get it out at all.
Well, and I think that points to the using it to be like, that's when he's lying. He has a tell. Or hiding some information. How about the Crown Point? I hear it say, no man's land. I was like, wow. When you get an Easter egg, the Easter Bunny's rarely throwing it at you quite so hard.
For anybody who doesn't know, listening, No Man's Land is a pretty famous Batman storyline where Gotham was destroyed by an earthquake and cut off from the rest of the world. So, yeah, they're definitely Easter egging that. We also didn't bring this up the last episode, but Penguin's girlfriend, I'm forgetting her first name. I think it's Eve, but her last name is Carlo, which is Basil Carlo is Clayface. So we might be getting something there a little bit, potentially.
That would be wild.
Man, they really just kind of lightly given us the maybe. Huh, comic book nerds? Maybe this is a thing that you might
like. Really cracked the code.
And we talked about this on the last podcast as well, but I don't think this show is Easter egg brained, you know, like it isn't poisoned by that. Like, it's part of the world that takes place in Gotham City. So, yeah, there are some people with the last name Carlo. It's not like we're setting up Clayface. Here he comes. Unless he shows up. It's more, here's something you can
careful, Alex. Now you're falling.
Well, but no, my point is, like, if he shows up at the end, it isn't they're introducing this character in order to introduce Basil Carlo later in the season. It's her name is Carlo. If she turns out to be related to Basil Carlo, you can be like, oh, okay, that was right there the entire time.
They're putting stuff on the table. I mean, it's hard to name characters. Like, let's do one that might mean something down the line without it being quite so like she works in a pottery studio or whatever.
Well, but I like that. I mean, that's what we used to get like back in the 80s and 90s where exactly like work in a pottery studio. She gets hit by lightning and suddenly she's Clayface or whatever. Instead, this is, it's Gotham City.
Tracks.
Yeah, there you go. That was my pitch for the Clayface movie.
Really good.
I would say work on it some more.
No.
That is Clay. It's all over my face. It burns. It's really good. What did you think? I thought this stuck out to me. Penguin in the first action sequence there, he has an Uzi. Last time you saw an Uzi,
speaking
especially
of the 80s and 90s, those were heavy Uzi times.
Yeah. What'd you think about those jokes also that they're throwing out? Pretty good. Pretty good jokes.
I know. Poor Ray.
I did love Penguin's line of like, hey, thanks for explaining it to me, Ray. It was so funny.
That was very funny. I also love the like move of as soon as he realizes he's in the lead car on this drop shipment and he sees the car pulling up and nobody else does, which was kind of surprising to me. I feel like they should be looking out for it. But that he goes back and like is casually telling the joke and holding on to the thing because he knows if the car is about to crash. I thought that was nicely staged throughout. That was good.
One of the things that it does bother me about showing Gotham and when they kind of like always pull up to a place and there's free parking right in front of where I was like, God damn it. Come on. Like, if you've ever lived in a city, there's never parking right in front of the fucking place. Come on.
That's funny. Wow. Country Pete now really remembering city life. Have you ever lived in New York, Pete? Because sometimes you luck out. The thing about Gotham that bothers me is like, is the entire city underneath an elevated train? Every scene in every Batman movie for the last decade and a half is like, oh yeah, the chase was under the elevated train. I was like, is it one big train roof over this town?
Well, I will say, just to throw it out there, I recently did a Gotham oral history for IGN. Yes.
I meant to talk about this because that's wild how much work you put into that.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I talked to the director and the showrunners and a bunch of the actors. Please check it out. I know it's crazy long, but I thought there was a lot of
interesting. You said the TV show Gotham, though, not
yes, the TV
the
show
universe.
Gotham. Yes, exactly. But the reason I brought this up now is I talked to Danny Cannon, who directed the Gotham pilot, and a lot of what they talked about, just to very simply lay this out there. So Bruno Heller was the showrunner. He had the broad beats of the season. Then he sat down with Danny Cannon, who was going to direct it. And after talking talking about their thoughts on Gotham and Batman and everything. He went away with a designer who I'm blanking on the name of, and I should remember because he sadly passed away like 2 years after this. But basically what they did is they drew Gotham City and came up with this look for Gotham City where they were like, okay, what it is it's 1970s, 1980s, built on the ruins of a city that was built in the 1930s. That's our look for Gotham on the TV show Gotham. But he very specifically, one of the phrases I remember that I think actually got left out of the oral history is Gotham should look like it's always on fire. And that was
that's why it always rains, because it's always on fire.
Yes. But his take on it is that, like, it's those 70s movies. It's like the French Connection and other like gritty 70s dirty movies like that. And then he called out also that when they were done with Gotham, they took all of their props and costumes and sets, Tom Phillips did, and just used them for the Joker. And I think it's the same thing. They use some of that stuff for the Batman as well, that obviously informs Penguin. So it's not, he was very clear about it. He was like, we are building on the stuff that was already there in the comics that Bob Kane and Bill Finger created decades previously, and that was already there. But he was drawing this line, I think, like, it all comes from the same place. And I bring this up in terms of the elevated trades. I think that's probably true in Nolan's Batman Begins at least as well. But like, they're all pulling on this exact same inspiration visually across the board. And I think that points to what it is they're looking at those movies like The French Connection and others there, where people were always meeting under the train tracks and the trains were always going over the head. And it was always in a parking garage somewhere. And it was always moody and darkly lit. So I think that's where it's coming from. But still, yes, your point is taken.
Let me ask you this.
Okay. A little bit more Escape New York, if you ask me.
Yeah, or that. Oh, all of that stuff. Yeah, for sure.
All of that. After Hours. In relation to this, Alex, how do the accents work in Gotham? I'm curious where the accents are coming from and where they're going.
Great question. Yes.
Because Penguin, Oz has a very pretty distinctive.
Hey, I'm a guy from Jersey kind of accent.
Yeah. When you do an accent for a mafia scene in improv, that's the one I'm doing.
Well, so here's one thing that we haven't talked about is that I guess the Batman did this, but I haven't been able to find this screenshot, but there was somebody who posted a screenshot of Vic's driver's license, and it says that Gotham is in New Jersey, which it has been a lot of times, but not always in the comic books. Like sometimes
that's crazy. So it's like Newark is what they're saying.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why he has that accent.
Oh, man. I mean, to be like, hey, this where your one of your favorite characters, Batman, lives is Newark. It's like, oh,
oh, good.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Shout out to
why
Newark,
is he
man?
Operating out of there? It's weird. I personally like it better, even though it makes absolutely no sense. One of my favorite description of where Gotham and Metropolis are is in, I don't remember which issue, I think it's like the second or third issue of JLA Avengers, where the Avengers go over to the Justice League Earth and they're in the Watchtower.
Yes.
And one of them is looking down, they're like, oh, weird, your East Coast is larger. That's because it's all there. The Gotham City, Metropolis, and New York City somehow are all right basically in the same place on the East Coast. And that fiction works a lot better to me than like, yeah, Gotham is in New Jersey so that New York City could exist.
100% I know this isn't in the DC universe. They're like, there's also New York. I'm like, guys, we're buying into the fiction.
Just say it's New York.
Just let Metropolis and Gotham be like the two halves of New York. Like Manhattan is Metropolis and Brooklyn is Gotham. Just own that. Don't tell me there's nine other cities. Like, okay, well, where's Dover? Where's Dover, DC? I just want to know because the closest analogy is to me is in Australia, there's Sydney and Melbourne. And they're sort of like Melbourne's a little grittier, Sydney's all glossy. Those are the closest I think on that I know of anyway, that I think of for Metropolis and Gotham.
Yeah, so that's a way of explaining it. Like, I like it a lot better if Gotham City is New York City, and when they're going to visit the Falcons, they're going out to either Long Island or Westchester, your choice, because it's a little ritzier. And then, yeah, maybe he's visiting his mom in New Jersey or something like that. Logistically, in my brain, that works a lot better. So that's kind of what I've subbed in there versus what it is, which is it's all New Jersey, baby.
Welcome to Wayne Manor here in Hoboken.
Hoboken.
Yeah, it's great. You can take New Jersey Transit to visit Batman whenever you want. Yeah,
hop on the PATH train.
Yeah.
That's why he has time to think, because he's riding on the PATH when he's going in to fight crime.
Totally. Vomit all over his costume on Saturday night.
Yeah, and he always buys two tall boys to ride down to Wayne Manor with.
That's for the ferry, dude. You get the tall boys.
What other
ferry.
Thing that was maybe not quite as weird, but weirdly reestablished or definitively established in this episode is Sophia is in the mausoleum. She's looking at the crypts, and we see Alberto Falcone, his mother, her mother, who is, I don't remember her name, whoever died back in the day, which feels like there's more to get into there, and Alberto Falcone's tomb. And we already knew that the Batman took place starting on Halloween over the course of like a week or two. It's a very short time period. And then the Penguin takes place a week after that. But we definitively find out it takes place in 2022 because that's when...
I also clocked that. I was like, huh, weird.
Which is when the Batman came out. I said that horribly wrong. The Batman came out in theaters in 2022. So I get why they're doing that. But at the same time, again, it just like, let me imagine it's taking place now. Don't give me a date on this.
Exactly. That's especially dovetailing over the last conversation. You're like, oh, you want me to go 2 years ago in New Jersey? Let me just imagine this in a fun way rather than having to do that.
Yeah. Anyway, any other notes on the episode, other things that folks want to call out there?
It was cool to see Mike Britt, the comedian, as the bartender where Sophia found the detective. So that was a kind of fun little thing there.
Great.
What did we think of Sal Maroney's, is it mom or wife? Probably wife. The woman with the incredibly deep voice.
Oh, she's amazing. What's her name? Suresh. I forget her last name. She's been on a ton of stuff, and she is always awesome. Here, I'm going to look her up.
I watched the sort of behind the Inside Gotham thing afterwards, the little featurette, and they were talking about how everyone really likes this character, Mrs. Maroney, because the signal here is like she's Iranian and he married her and then replaced a lot of his old henchmen with Persian mob, Iranian mob people. And I was like, oh, that is so interesting. The show doesn't touch that at all. Doesn't like talk
she
about
is
it or anything.
Badass though, man. Yeah. Oh my God.
But I do think that's a cool idea. I hope that becomes part of the story here.
Yeah, I didn't want to say this wrong. She is probably best known. She was on The Expanse for a bunch of years, but she was also in, per our nerd brains, X-Men The Last Stand. Yeah. She was also in Star Trek Beyond, House of Sand and Fog. She was also in Damsel recently on Netflix, and she does a voice on Arcane.
This is a completely off topic, but did you guys watch Damsel? That's like the number one thing on Netflix for the last year.
Yeah, it was all right.
There you go.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's a Millie Bobby Brown. She's a princess who gets sacrificed to a dragon. It's fine.
It's most popular thing on
Millie
television.
Bobby Brown, big star. Big star. Yeah. And what's her name now? Millie Bobby Brown Bon Jovi, I believe.
Yeah.
She married John Bon Jovi's son. So now her full name is Millie Bobby Brown Bon Jovi.
That feels like... Let's just marry for the name thing, and then we'll...
Yeah. This would be so funny. What a good prank. Yeah, all right. Well, I think that's the note everybody wants us to end this Penguin podcast on. If you would like to support the show and all the shows we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about the Penguin. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice. To subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, Dad, I hope you're okay with cilantro. I hope you don't have that thing.
Well, Let's I dance. Can't imagine. We're his
we all
children.
Three of us.
We
that's
are,
true, genetically.
It's perfect. So,
yeah, we'll go out for tacos, so, Dad.
Please, we want to know something about you.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.